This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton. For more information, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.
For the first time, the cost of Alzheimer's will cross $250 billion. Medicare and Medicaid are going to cover almost 80% of that, or about $175 billion, but out-of-pocket spending is still expected to be around $56 billion. The reasons include more hospital stays and the fact that the people that are afflicted with Alzheimer's are a majority of them receiving adult day services or home care. But what's being done and can be done in the future to maybe lower this burden? Krista McKay is Director of Programs and Services for the Alzheimer's Association chapter here in the Philadelphia area. She joins us on the phone right now, and joining us a little later will be Jeff Borkoff, who is part of the Early Stage Advisory Group for the Alzheimer's Association nationally. First, Krista, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you. Great to have you. Thank you. The numbers that your organization put out, that $259 billion, that seems like, it's to a degree a scary number as to how high it is.
Absolutely frightening. And each year, Daniel, we publish through the Alzheimer's Association, the Facts and Figures publication, and it really does a really great job of a demographic overview of what's happening in the world of Alzheimer's. And each year we see that these statistics around the disease prevalence gets worse, and around the costs. This year focused on the costs specifically because of what it's going to do to the economy and to us, you know, in the socioeconomic platform. And as you mentioned, you know, these costs right now are $259 billion that they've estimated to cost the nation. By 2050, it could rise as high as $1.1 trillion. And a lot of it has to do with the longevity of this disease. The average lifespan after a diagnosis is upwards of 10 years. Some people can live for much, much longer than that. And the trajectory of the disease in that regard and how much has to go into the caregiving of it,
right,
is really what adds to those costs.
The numbers of people that will be diagnosed most likely this year with Alzheimer's will be ballpark what number? And I ask that is, how much has that increased, let's just say, even over the last 5 years?
Well, you know, it's 5.4 million estimated. And so the deaths, and when we look at, you know, the deaths that are related to Alzheimer's have nearly doubled in the past 14 years. So from 2000 to 2014, we see that the deaths from the number one cause of heart disease continue to steadily decrease,
right,
while the deaths from Alzheimer's continue to rapidly increase to 89%. So the numbers now where we Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death. So we do have more than 5 million Americans living right now with that.
Yeah.
As by 2050, the estimate is could rise as much as high as 16 million.
It seems like from the reporting that you folks have done, that number, that $259 billion number, could even be higher right now if it weren't for the amount of unpaid assistance that actually a lot of these people diagnosed with Alzheimer's get right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. These caregivers provide an estimated, in 2016, the estimated was 18.2 billion hours of care that are valued over $230 billion. So you can imagine if we didn't have caregivers, you know, trying to do this, it would be a lot worse. However, the effects of caregiving are such that it actually adds to the cost of the burden because of the health issues that come along with, and the stressors and the physical and the emotional and all of those things that come along with this caregiving role. impacts these numbers as well.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring that up, because not only that, the impact physically, but these are people that aren't, you know, six-figure salaries for the most part. They're making, what, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 at the most.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's a huge burden on so many levels, like you said. I mean, the level of assistance provided by caregivers tends to be extensive compared with caregivers of other older adults. So it is different, and they see that one more than, you know, 35% of caregivers for people with Alzheimer's or another dementia report their health has gotten worse due to care responsibilities. And as symptoms worsen in the person with Alzheimer's, the amount of care needed continues to increase. So it goes from the ability to live independently at home with some guidance and assistance to needing more supports, such as an adult day or home health services. And then it kind of, and as it progresses, the long-term care needs come into play. Is it going to be, you know, nursing home placement, potentially, or a full-time live-in caregiver because of the effects of the disease?
What is the medical community doing and able to do right now, and even organizations like Alzheimer's Association, to make people more aware and to be able to really kind of motivate even more to try and, you know, try and find reasons why Alzheimer's is really afflicting so many people right now?
Well, I mean, we know that, you know, the biggest risk factor is age. So when we see one in three seniors dies with Alzheimer's or another dementia, it is a public health crisis. Our goal at the association is to, through these facts and figures, through our advocacy work, through our research, try to get this on the public health landscape and make people as aware as possible that we need to do something now. And, you know, this is just going to get worse. One of the things that we recommend is getting behind, you know, our public policy initiatives for people to become aware and engaged, you know, like our early stage advisor who's going to come on next as a guest. You know, these are the people that are on the front lines trying to get the word out about this as the crisis that it is, and to get, you know, the general public aware that becoming an advocate, lending your voice, is a very simple way.
Yeah.
To get the ear of our government to say we need more funding for research, essentially. We need to accelerate the research that's going to give us a potential treatment to ameliorate the symptoms currently or hopefully prevent it from beginning.
The
research has shown in this publication, in fact, I don't know if you, it's a very comprehensive publication, but there is a bent toward those biomarkers and thinking about how do we look at what's happening 20 years before we even see symptoms.
Right.
You know, and that's really where we need to go.
And that becomes important because even though you say the majority of people with Alzheimer's are 65 and above, there is a segment of people that are younger that are being afflicted with this, which obviously, just off of what you said, if we can know in the 20s or the 30s, the age of people that they may be susceptible to this, then we're one step closer to trying to find a cure for it.
Absolutely, Daniel. I mean, it is essential. I mean, we are all at risk, and there are more and more people getting diagnosed in earlier ages. You'll talk to Jeff in a minute.
I mean,
this is a scary prospect when you see the numbers of people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s getting diagnosed. And the trajectory of that disease, unfortunately, is different. It's a lot shorter. The lifespan is a lot shorter. So it's a crisis on many fronts. And, you know, the care, the burden, the monetary burden on our economy, the physical, the mental, the spiritual, emotional effect on the people that are dealing with it, the patients, their families. It's a very, it affects many, many people.
That was going to actually be my next question, was about the families, mm-hmm. because we talked about the caregivers, but the family mm-hmm. element is something that maybe not is talked about enough. And just the impact of Alzheimer's on a parent with their child or the grandchildren or friends. I mean, there's so many. It to a degree is like a spider web, because it starts in the middle
it really works its
way out.
That's a great analogy. That's a great analogy. It really is. It does impact the extended family, the immediate family. People don't know how to talk about it in the family. There's sometimes a disconnect on what, especially with the, long distance caregivers, what can they do?
Yeah.
What can, there's usually a family dynamic where one person is usually the one that has more of the responsibilities as opposed to, maybe other siblings. There's the role changes involved in that, and so there's a lot involved in those roles that a person has to take on suddenly, and they don't really know what direction to go. And that's a lot of what we do on the other end for our association, is we provide that direct support and consultation. And if I can just plug, Daniel, the helpline number really quickly, I'd love to, because that's one way, an easy, free way to get people support, and that's 800-272-3900. And that's 24/7, and you always get a live person. And we pride ourselves on being available that much for people, because we know how widespread, and that's a 24-hour a day for people.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are joined now as well by Jeff Borghoff, as we mentioned before, who's part of the early stage advisory group at the Alzheimer's Association. Jeff, great to have you on.
Oh, good morning, Daniel. Good to be here with you.
Thank you. Greatly appreciate it. Talk about your situation, because the early stage advisory group are people that are afflicted by this, correct?
Indeed. Yes. And most of us are, in the younger... younger onset, and so like myself, I believe there's 10 in the group, and I'm 52. I was diagnosed when I was 51.
Right.
And I was diagnosed with younger onset, early stage Alzheimer's disease.
What are you hearing from doctors as to really why we are seeing an increase in the numbers of Alzheimer's cases right now, Jeff?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the primary reason is due to the way that science has changed and been able to diagnose the disease. Formerly, the only way to really diagnose Alzheimer's was postmortem. In recent years, we've had tests like the amyloid PET scan tests that can be conducted to actually visualize the amyloid plaque buildup in the brain. Another way of detecting it is through a spinal tap. And both of those methods were used to detect the Alzheimer's in my brain. So I think with the advance in diagnostic techniques, we're able to see it much better. And I think the prominence of centers of study that you're seeing pop up around the nation, at medical universities and so on and so forth, are really starting to adjust their staffing and their discipline around focusing more on study of Alzheimer's and dementia.
We're joined on the phone by Jeff Borkoff, who is part of the Early Stage Advisory Group at the Alzheimer's Association, and also by Krista McKay, Director of Programs and Services for the Alzheimer's Association chapter here in the Philadelphia area. Your comments welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you'd like, you can't get to your phone, you're more than welcome to send me a comment via Twitter. We'll bring it up on the show live at BizRadio111, or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. The other piece is, Krista, which is interesting and it's scary to a degree, is the fact that, you know, we talk about this in the scope of being a problem here in the United States. This is a global problem. And looking at some maps and laying out where a lot of these cases are, Asia actually has probably as many or more cases of Alzheimer's. But part of that is obviously the amount of population that they have there. So, you know, we look at it here in the U.S., but this is a global issue right now.
It absolutely is. You are correct on that front. Sure. And, you know, we're the Alzheimer's Association is the leader in world leader in research. And, you know, we convene, many, many researchers from around the world in our International Alzheimer's Association Conference, which is held every year in July. And, you know, that is a convening of over 4,000 researchers. And this year is promised to be one of the bigger, more attended ones, where, you know, all types of modalities are looked at and the, you know, cutting edge research. So it's, it's good to know that, you know, this is being attacked at from all fronts. And it's an exciting opportunity when you, and I've been had the privilege of being there myself and amongst all of these, you know, brilliant minds trying to come up with a solution for this. Yeah. And, you know, if people are interested in that, of course, it's going to be held in London this year. So right. You can find more information about it on our website. It is a global problem.
We're joined by Krista McKay and Jeff Borkoff. We're talking about Alzheimer's and the rise of it and the fact that the amount of cost that will be associated with Alzheimer's this year, for the first time, going over $250 billion, $259 billion for the first time ever. Your comments welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866 is the number. Or again, if you can't get to your phone, you can send us a comment via Twitter, either at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. Jeff, what are some of the things that you and the advisory group are really trying to do now to focus on to see what can be done in the short term right now?
Sure. Our main focus at this time of the year, Daniel, is to really to focus on the forum that's coming up at the end of this month. The members of my group and I, along with many, many advocates for Alzheimer's, will be down at in Washington, D.C., at our advocacy forum, meeting with our representatives, our senators, and our representatives, to really drive home the importance of the funding for research for a cure for Alzheimer's disease. We have a tough job ahead of us, especially with and you probably heard everything in the news with regards to budget cuts and so on.
Sure.
And so
yeah.
Forth. So we have quite a bit of work to do, and so it's especially important this year with regard to the numbers that have changed from last year to this year with the facts and figures. It's escalating, and we really need to do something about it. It's not going to get any better. There's no cure. There's no way to slow it down. We really need the funding from our government into the NIH so that we can increase the research to find a cure to this devastating disease.
Krista, that was going to be my next question, and Jeff kind of leads me right into it, is the potential loss of funding by an organization like the National Institutes of Health. That ends up becoming a component that obviously does not make this process any easier.
Well, that's exactly right. So, it makes it, even more, primary for us to lobby for that. Our platform each year is to look at, what do we see as priorities? And, these publications that come out every year kind of lead us into what we're asking for when we go to the Day on the Hill. And, we hope that this is going to, shake up, the government to look at it, at the problem that it is.
Yeah. Jeff, you being diagnosed at age 51, I mentioned it with Krista a little bit earlier in the interview, but just the fact that, a majority of the people that are 65 and older are the ones that are the focus of this, but yourself and probably other people's maybe a little bit younger than yourself are a key demographic here in terms of understanding the disease and really starting to get a handle on it so that it can be alleviated further on down the line.
Absolutely. One of my top three things that I advocate for is clinical trials. The clinical trials are extremely important. The only way that we're going to find a cure to this deadly disease is if people my age and younger volunteer and get themselves involved with clinical trials. So that's one of the things that I really advocate for amongst the community of my known younger onset community, the people living with the disease. I believe it's underreported. The statistics that we see coming out in facts and figures, and I think Krista could probably validate this, is really, that information's coming out of Medicare, and I believe, for older folks. But a person like myself, I'm 52 years old. I'm not part of that recordable statistic. The friends in the community that I'm part of with younger onset, they're not part of any statistic. So I think the numbers are actually greater than are being reported. At least I'm finding that to my experience. And so, go ahead.
I was going to say, Krista, can you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, and I think Jeff's really on target there, because the statistic really hasn't changed for a number of years when we report that, as many as 200,000 Americans who are not 65 years old have younger onset.
Yeah.
We know that from experience and talking with a lot of people that unfortunately did wind up getting a diagnosis finally, it was a very harrowing process. And many doctors at that age, if you're complaining about memory loss, will direct you in a completely different way,
right?
Stress related or something else. And I think that might be part of it, as the underreporting, because the diagnostic process seems to be a lot more complex for people that are younger, because Alzheimer's isn't on the radar of every primary care physician at that age.
Which ends up being important, considering, as you said, that it's the sixth leading cause of death right now here in the United States. So
you
have the potential to really alleviate a large number of those deaths if you have earlier diagnosis of the characteristics of Alzheimer's.
Correct. And you're absolutely right. And part of, the initiative ongoing has been early diagnosis. And, physician outreach is one of the things that we do. We dedicate a lot of time to that. One of our initiatives in our strategic plan is just that, is to increase enrollees in trial match, as Jeff has advocated for. You know, this is one of those programs that, you know, we want to reduce the stigma about clinical trials. That's the one way that we're going to be able to get, you know, this disease, treatments for it quicker in the pipeline when we have people to actually test it. But you are right. If we reduce stigma, we increase awareness about the disease, about the potential symptoms, about things that we can do that are preventative potentially, that primary care physicians, all physicians are aware. We can get more diagnoses that are correct sooner, and that's a huge goal.
Jeff, you want to add something there?
Yeah, I was just going to say I was actually misdiagnosed several times because the doctors and physicians were really unwilling to go down a path of an Alzheimer's diagnosis because I was 51.
Right.
It just wasn't on their radar. It just wasn't making sense to them. But it turns out that yes, it was Alzheimer's. So.
What have the doctors told you, Jeff, about your disease and how it will play out in the future for you?
Well, you know, when I was first diagnosed, I went to my neurologist at Columbia Medical Center of Neurology, which is an exceptional hospital, and I said to the doctor, the neurologist, I said, well, you know, how long do I have to live? And, you know, given the statistics, actually, that Krista mentioned, you know, at the beginning, was that with a younger onset, it's actually, you know, the lifespan's a little shorter.
Right.
So, you know, I wanted to kind of wrap my head around, you know, how many years am I looking at? And she told me not to think about that now, because her feeling was, being, you know, a specialist in the industry, is that she really believes that we are close to a cure.
Hmm.
So I'm going to take that and I'm going to go with that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work as hard as I can every single day, along with the Alzheimer's Association and my friend Krista, who I know, and do everything I can to make that a reality, and hopefully I'll save my life. But you know, this is something that we have to eradicate for hopefully for my generation and generations to come, because you know it's the Gen X and millennials are up next.
Great to have you both on the show. Thank you, Krista. Thank you, Jeff. And we will try and stay in touch with both of you as this develops over the next several months and years. Greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Krista McKay from the Philadelphia Area Alzheimer's Association Chapter. Jeff Borgoff, who's part of their early stage advisory group.
For more business news and analysis from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.